My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And we're just recording a little wrapper thing in case you're wondering why this is on your feed or the news didn't reach you. As we're recording this last week, we lost Jeremy Greer, one of our friends who we met through our shows, through Bonfireside Chat, and who was a host on the network and everything. And we thought people, you know, one of the things about Jeremy is, in addition to being a close friend, he was great.
Yeah.
He was really good on podcasts, very funny, very insightful, plugged up a lot of holes in our knowledge base.
Yes.
And stuff. So we thought, and he, you know, I wrote a big thing on Patreon about this, but one of the things about Jeremy is he loved podcasts.
Yep.
He absolutely loved this medium. He did as many as we do, and he's only one person.
Yep.
We thought we would rerun the Jeremy files, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, not to be confused with non-human biologics. So these are the Jeremy appearances. If you want to listen to kind of a chronology of him being on the shows.
Yeah.
And revisit those appearances.
Yeah. Just go back, listen to him being great. You know, just wanted to do this in remembrance.
Yeah. He cared about having his podcast stuff around.
Yep.
After he passed. So, you know, we're doing our part for his Duck Feed appearances here, I guess.
Yes.
And in case anybody wanted to listen back, save you the trouble of having to search through the archives.
Yeah, yeah. So,
yeah, give a listen.
These will be hitting the feed. I don't know if it's going to be all at once or kind of all in rapid succession. But yeah, just that is why you're seeing this stuff.
Yeah. And if you're not interested in that and everything, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just ignore them. That's the thing. But if you are, here they are. And yeah.
Some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is a Shadow Tree favorite. And we're doing this a little bit differently. Usually we record these wrappers at a different time. But it just happened to work out. We're doing the roundtable. And this episode, we are joined by...
the best rapper of all time, Jeremy Greer.
And take that. Well, at least the best rapper that's ever been on one of our roundtables.
That's probably not true because you already had open mic Eagle on. So no, I can't even front against Mike.
Javon can actually rap as well. We just don't talk about it.
Oh, God. How is he the perfect individual? I don't understand.
He's great.
This is great. Thank you so much for having me back on. I don't know if you guys know this. I'm sure you do, but it may have been lost to history. But y'all were my first podcast that I ever recorded.
I did know that. Yeah.
And so now it's good to be back on the couch that I lost my cherry on. So I'm very excited to be here.
We were going to actually do a Howard Stern kind of thing. That was from that script.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
We ditched it at the very end and decided to do a regular episode. But we had a whole bit planned. And
I was wondering why the Sibian was in here, but I just didn't ask questions.
Jeremy, how do people know you?
Podcasts, probably, hopefully. If in real life, hopefully not. I do a lot of podcasts. I've done a bunch of episodes of Bonfireside Chat. Gary, you and I have a podcast together called Days of Future Cast, which I'm looking forward to resuming pretty soon as the schedules align. And I do a lot of other stuff. I do podcasts on Supernatural, X-Files, Merlin, Cowboy Bebop. I just started a Hannibal podcast.
Good Lord.
Which I am really excited about. The Hannibal podcast is really, really good. You ever had a co-host that's just incredibly smarter than you are?
Not me.
Okay.
Not
me, right? we were doing an episode and like the subject of medical gaslighting comes up on Hannibal. And she sent me a paper a published academic paper that she and several other people had written and published together. And I was like, oh, I'm just used to bullshitting.
I can be over here. I can have like a clown horn that I can honk it a couple times.
Exactly.
that's my, yeah.
I've heard really good things about that. Will, our mutual friend, is a really big fan.
Yes.
Mentions it, even not on the air.
Does he really? So, that's very nice of him. Tell him I said thank you.
I will.
Maybe one day I'll deign to bring him on the podcast. Maybe that's a thing that will happen.
Yeah, I'm sure he would really love that.
Yeah.
So if you don't know Jeremy from those things, or you know, from guesting on this show, we first found out about Jeremy through the Dark Souls Haters blog, and then which is old and is mostly compiling back in the day in Dark Souls when you got invaded. You used to be able to send a person a message immediately after, which was really weird. That was bad functionality, Xbox.
Yeah.
Jeremy compiled a bunch of people being really mad about PvP.
Looking back, it seems like a weird thing to do. that website's still up. I didn't even realize. Okay, yeah. So that website is still going. I should probably delete that blog at some point.
We knew Jeremy even just from the Something Awful forums. Like, that's where we first got aware of him, right?
Yeah. I was the very annoying dude in the Dark Souls thread who was just badgered you guys into letting me be on your podcast. And it worked out great.
Yeah, so it was great.
For me. I don't know about you. You guys probably suffered some ratings.
Yeah, you're okay.
No, it's been helpful. There's the Jeremy bump. It's in that it's not a reverse bump.
You know, besides Dark Souls Haters, if you're like want Dark Souls content, I did Don't Give Up Skeleton, which is a much, much bigger body of work and much more, something I'm much more proud of.
Right. And it's worth checking out. There have been tons of cool people have been on that show.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Gary.
And us. Jeremy, Shadow of the Erdtree.
Yes.
You played it. You and I haven't really had a chance to talk about it at all. For Peek Behind the Curtain, Jeremy and I are friends in real life. We text and stuff. I just had a couple interactions on Blue Sky, like seeing kind of your thoughts about it, but generally, where do you come down? What are your impressions and such?
Oh, I thought it was absolutely amazing. I've always been impressed with From Software's DLC efforts, almost without exception. Dark Souls 3, I'm not looking at you. But almost without exception, they've been just absolutely incredible, right? Like, you think about the Old Hunters, you think about Artorias of the Abyss, all of the Dark Souls 2 DLCs that came out were uneven in places, but still really, really great. And somehow the Shadow of the Erdtree just, like, I think just eclipsed all of them. From a sheer, like, world design, level design, like, the depth and the scope of this thing, it felt like its own little... I know a lot of people threw out like Elden Ring 2 when the DLC came out. I don't think it's quite that, but it feels like Elden Ring 1.5, definitely. I could not believe, like, looking over the cliff, you'd look down and I'd be like, oh, wait, I'm probably be able to go there. That's crazy. And you could.
Eventually,
yeah. I was messaging our mutual friend, Patrick Stardust, and he's going through it in his Soul Level 1 run that he does for YouTube. And he's at a particular boss. I can't remember the dude's name, but it's the one like almost all the way at the bottom before you get to the scary forest area.
The
Inquisitor. Thank you.
Yeah.
And he was like, this guy seems like built specifically to fight me. And I was like, yeah, but if you win, there's a whole nother area. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking? A whole other area? He said, I counted 7 descents from how I got here. And I'm like, keep going. You just keep going down, dude. It's never gonna end.
Oh, it's the best thing. Yeah. There's no bottom.
So satisfying.
It'd be very funny if that just ended with the Inquisitor and it was like, well,
see you later.
You know, here's a guy fight that we don't learn too much about.
Just overwhelmingly impressed. And I don't have a lot of time for video games nowadays. But every single time I would pick up a weapon, I'd be like, I want to make a build for this.
Yeah.
Like, I want to make a build for this one. I want to make a build for that one. I want to throw stuff. I want to do all of this stuff. And it's rare that's something that I think is generally missing from some of the DLCs that From Software has done in the past, where like you usually just go through with your build and you're like, I'm just going to keep this level 25 weapon or whatever. All of the weapons were really cool. The armor was really cool. The bosses are almost like universally fucking great. And they've even tuned down the bosses that I didn't like. So like, I haven't even tried those since the patches, but the ones that I thought were a little too much, I just summoned for. I just don't care anymore. I watched, this is full spoilers, right? We can talk about whatever.
Yeah.
So like the end boss, this Radon dude, like I literally watched two guys fight him while I just gestured. And I was like, you guys take the last 10%. I'll be over here. And I just don't. And like, I've heard they've tuned him down some, so he's a little easier. But I absolutely adored it. I thought this was great all the way through.
You said something in there that I want to piggyback off of, because I think it's something that we talked about a little bit in the early beginning part of the season, but we don't usually talk about with guests. And that is how this DLC, more than a lot of DLCs, and specifically more than like FromSoft DLCs, feels like it's really interested in expanding the play space as well as the kind of lore and story space, not just in terms of bosses, but you know, you talked about a lot of different new weapon types and everything, but also there are like whole new schools of magic and support structures.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
You know, for those, like it feels like is kind of ironic. And between that and then the absolute abundance of upgrade material you get, it, this one, more than the old Hunters or more than the Lost Crowns or whatever, is saying, hey, like try something new just for this.
Yes.
You know? You know,
and here's all of the tools that you need to do it, right? Like, we're not even going to withhold stuff from you. We're just going to give it to you.
And they very specifically have like NPCs and invasions and stuff that demo the stuff for you.
Yeah.
I know. It's so good. Like when you fight the dancer lady and then you get her clothes, I'm like, yeah. Hell yeah, this is perfect. This is exactly. And I was the dancer. I wore the dancer clothes for most of the DLC because I love them so much.
It's also a thing you do. If you fight somebody in real life, you can get their clothes sometimes.
Yes.
It
depends on what the last blow is. Like if they... You have to knock them out. It's got to be a KO
situation. And the clothes. Like, some clothes are easier, you know.
Yeah.
Full tuxedo. Difficult. I really like that about this, even though I feel like it flies in my instincts, you know? Like, my first playthrough, I was like, I got to do something safe.
Yes.
You know, I want to try this, but, like, this is hard. I want something that I already am very familiar with. And the second playthrough, I'm doing a lot more experimentation, and it's pretty fun.
And it's especially given that the difficulty scaling is so different than the previous DLCs have been. All of the DLCs that they've made have been more difficult than the base game. And this takes it up a level with the introduction of all of the Shattered Tree blessings and things. But like when you first get in and like you fight a guy and he takes off half your health and you're level 200, you're like, what the fuck is going on? so that, and I think that leans into that safety thing of we're just sticking with the stuff that you know and that you know is going to work. But eventually they just give you so much stuff and you're like, well, I'd be stupid not to try. Like, you just gave me 700,000 echoes or whatever. I don't even remember the name of the fucking currency anymore. I'm so bad.
It's fine. It does that and in part because like as it gets easier with the additional fragments, you might feel more free, I guess.
Yes.
To do that as well.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah.
I also I have a special place in my heart for this DLC. I've been fairly public about this, but I had some pretty bad medical stuff happen to me over the last year. And because of the treatment, my hands had all kinds of weird issues and I wasn't able to really play video games. And this was the first thing that I was able to play after finishing treatment and going through like some recovery process and some like post-treatment kind of stuff specifically for neuropathy issues. Mm-hmm. And I was... As you might imagine, like being a huge fan of this game in general, I was like, oh man, I'm going to be like watching from the sidelines while all of my buds play this DLC. And I like physically cannot pick up the controller. Cause that's what happened the first time I tried is like, I picked up the controller and it like slipped from my hands and I was woe is me. But yeah, everything worked. So I'm like the only limitation was I could only play for like a couple hours at a time, which, hey, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. In your 40s. That's regular. Yeah.
So yeah, this does hold a special place just for there because it was like my first big like return to video games after several months.
Yeah. And just kind of like, is it always going to be like this, you know? And then
no,
it's not. Yeah. Like exactly. I was not nearly as hurt, but when I fucked up my arm several years ago, like 2017 or whatever, that was me and the PlayStation 4 Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like I also had
neuropathy
and couldn't hold the controller. Like I had a very similar, and so I'm not comparing, you know, the illnesses at all, like in severity, I was fine. But I was just, you know, I couldn't hold a controller. I'd drop it automatically.
No.
And then eventually got to the point where it's like, no, if I stand up, I can do this.
Yeah. Once again, Gary and I are turning this into old man complaints. Complaints about video games.
I think it's pretty understandable. You don't want something that you have enjoyed in your whole life taken away from you. I think that's it for everybody. You know.
Well, and you don't like having it be this thing you look forward to and then having to kind of sit it out.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a bad feeling.
Exactly. I was genuinely thinking of like, I'm going to deactivate all social media. Like, I don't even want to be reminded of it. And then I was like, okay, like a couple of nights before I picked up the controller, I was like, I'm just going to load Elden Ring and see what I can do. And I was like, oh, okay, this is working. I'm set.
So kind of getting the, you know, getting the ability to actually physically play back, you know, this is a pretty difficult DLC. Like, did it feel like you had a huge hump to get over? Did you like start a new playthrough and do stuff you're familiar with to kind of ramp up to it? Like, kind of seems like they're getting hit with both barrels, both like physical difficulty and then, you know, the rude wake up call you get for the first few hours of this.
Yeah, I know you can shortcut Elden Ring a lot, but I just picked up my like level 170, 200 character and was like, I'm just going to rock this. That was in whatever. I don't even think it was in New Game Plus. I think I just hung out in the new game. So I was kind of OP to begin with and then just played around with it. Difficulty wise, it was interesting like talking to people because like one of the bosses I remember people complaining about. Y'all, I'm so terrible with names. The one that guards the castle, the chick with the two swords.
Rolana.
I remember like I went online and people were like, oh my God, Rolana is so difficult. And like I got her in one attempt and I was like, oh, okay, well, I must be doing something good. And I know like Dark Souls finds your difficulty level, but I've never really had much of an issue with the game. Like with any of the bosses, I had mostly a good time with them. I think the only one that I died, probably the one that I died the most to, was the absolutely amazing looking hand boss that I just adore. That boss was just so fucking weird. I didn't even know where to look. And then of course, as you find like all of the blessings and stuff, and I thought, especially that first run where you're exploring every single inch. So I was finding all of that stuff pretty quickly and beefing myself up pretty quickly. So I felt like I was pretty capable throughout the game. I never really felt like frustrated at any given time.
Yeah.
I think we talked about that a little bit with the difficulty. And I think one of the differences for people who find it very difficult, who kind of discoursed about it, is they were soloing everything, you know, that they were getting. And then also a combination between that and then not exploring, like hitting a boss and stubbornly fighting it until they beat it rather than going off and finding more fragments.
Yes. Yes. You know?
Pretending this is Sekiro.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Or, I mean, there weren't fragments prior to this, you know, you'd think like, oh, a good level, this should be fine.
Yeah.
You know, it does ask you to, and it does it explicitly, but we talked about this a little bit, but I think one of the things that's a flaw in the DLC or could have been communicated better is how much it requires that. Because typically like in, just video, you know, from games, but just video games in general, you could assume the thing in front of me right about now is probably about the right level for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, Elden Ring does a lot of work to kind of subvert that early on with these early shock and awe fights that tell you basically to go to the Weeping Peninsula. But it's, you know, a lifetime of video game training you're pushing past almost.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think that, and I, you know, you mentioned like fighting it solo. I just don't have the patience anymore, to be honest with you. Like I remember sitting on my couch and fighting the one of the Watchdog, you know, dungeons
Watchdog guy or whatever.
And I think I literally fought that for like 10 hours until I mastered it, right? Which also I'm not a very good video game player, but like I did that. And I'm never going to do anything like that again. like I'm absolutely like I'll go in a boss and I'll fight it a couple of times and I'm like, oh, I think I got this, and I'll keep fighting it, or I'll be like, this seems like just bullshit, I'm just gonna summon like five different dudes to come help me out. And of course like the NPCs, they give you so many NPCs to summon that I always go to NPCs first because I like experiencing that in game.
Yeah, it's so weird for me, like you people speak just to hear like, oh yeah, no, I had to resort to summoning. I've never had compunction about that. Like people can take away whatever license or card they want. Like I don't know, it's a little bit like you guys know you don't have to like take, you know, three baseball bats up to the plate, you know, after you're on deck. Like you don't have to try and hit the ball with three bats. You can just swing one, right?
Yeah. Well, I think that, like, so it speaks to like, I want to say devil's advocate. It's not a devil. It's just not where I fall down on things. I think what it speaks to though is like, for me, when I'm playing one of these games, ultimately, even though they're very rich and there's like thematic, you know, stuff to chew on, and there are more complicated kind of mechanics and things that engage my brain on a higher than that level, ultimately I'm there to have fun, you know? And for me, and fun means things to different people. You can't take fun away. Fun is real. the fun that I have is seeing new stuff in the game, piecing together like lore shit, getting the story, seeing really cool visuals, trying out builds. Mm-hmm. So I'm chasing those things. And when I'm on a boss, that is a wall between before I can get to more of my fun.
Yes.
Other people who are like, oh, you know, I'm not going to summon for this. The fun for them is that feeling after 10 hours of being like, yeah, I could probably second try the old watchdog right now.
Yeah.
I just have this inherited, you know, built into my DNA. And it's like this gulf, you know, of us all talking about the same thing, that the same box that contains both in equal measure.
Yeah.
You know, it's, there's no reason for any sneering on either side of this, you know, and all like I've been guilty about, you know, getting, frustrated at like people, you know, who are just way into the honor of the one-on-one steely combat between them and the machine.
Yeah.
John Henry 2.0, who will be the victor? Like, I think that's a little bit silly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I don't know, like fun is real.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a weird thing. I never also, but this is all my long point of saying, like, one, I think it's really fun to fight with summons. Mm-hmm. Every time I've ever co-opted in this game, it's really fun.
Yes.
You know, there's like a connection side to it. That's cool. And since I want fun, like I will seek that out. It doesn't feel like a failed state to me either.
Yeah. I didn't mean to come across like I was, you know, reading the Riot Act, anybody who chooses not to summon. I think my instinct is just to look at that and say, but you're suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's so alien to me sometimes. Like that idea of doing the 10 to 15 hour like boss attempts at, you know, RL1 with no benefits or anything like that. It's just like, it's somebody's version of fun, but it's so alien to me that it might as well be just like jackhammering me in the crotch with a hammer. Like I don't like, yeah. I guess somebody enjoys this, but it's not me.
And some people pay a lot of money to get jackhammered in the crotch.
Okay.
That is true.
You got a jackhammer in the crotch guy, Carl?
No.
I got a dirt guy, but everybody can change numbers.
Everybody's got their own thing, you know?
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah. Go to the tool library and rent that stuff.
Also, it's fun the weird interactions you get with NPCs, because I was talking to some people about the I can't remember anybody's name anymore. I should have literally turned the video game on and just played them. The main NPC that guides you through the whole thing, that's chasing me the whole game.
Lita? Yeah.
So when you fight her, like a bunch of NPCs show up, right? Like depending on the quest that you have solved. And apparently because I did some weird stuff somewhere, instead of like an NPC that I knew to show up and help me out, it was just one of Moog's guys.
Oh,
it's just like a guy from Moog. Like he's not even named. He's just like a dude. And I had to like go and like, I was describing this to someone and they were like, oh no, I got like Sir Pontificate or whatever the dude's name is. And I was like, I didn't get any of those guys. So I had to look it up. And apparently if you do things a certain way, like you get a weird Moog guy to come and help you out. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's a neat little interaction. I kind of dig that.
If Ansbach is dead, you get this because they don't want it to be 1-on-4 or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Like they'll usually just get
one of those guys. It's so funny.
Yeah, like just like a blood guy. Hello, I'm blood.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? I got sent by Moog. Like, all right, what's up, dude? I killed that guy to get into this world.
They call me Formless Andrew. I'm here to just spread the word.
Oh god!
But I love weird NPC interactions like that. So whenever there's NPCs to summon, I will generally always do it. And again, just don't really care about spending the time. I'm very much more on Gary's side. The fun for me is the exploration. And I think if there's anything that I have to complain about the DLC, it's that some of the just like in the level enemies are just way too overtuned. Specifically thinking about the haunted house before the madness boss, where there's just a couple of those like night dudes in very tight quarters that take fucking forever to kill. And I'm like, I want to explore the weird haunted house. I don't want to fight this weird guy. Like, give me some shitty ghost to fight or something. Like, give me some humanity sprites to kill, like releasing, and let me just experience the vibes.
Yeah. That's how I feel about the final dungeon. Just as you're headed up the tower to the gate, it's just like, I don't know. I do not need to be pummeled by another, by one of these horned warriors with a different element.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Why are there so many of these guys? And I know that there's lore reasons for why, but also like, there's no lore reason for that dude having 20,000 HP though.
If there's a lore reason for there to be a guy, that doesn't necessarily mean there's lore reason for there to be like 6 copies of the guy.
Sure.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's interesting to think about that, because I was doing my play for the episode we're going to record after this, and realizing one of the things with this DLC, which I'm still like extremely warm on, but that element of you know, having kind of enemies spammed in at certain points is something that's hitting worse with me on my second playthrough. Like my first playthrough, I'd go through the haunted house. I'd be like, okay, cool. I had to fight this guy. It was fine. Cause I was like, I'm probably going to get to a bonfire. I'm probably only gonna fight this guy once. This is fine. On the second playthrough, I'm really feeling it a little bit more, like just a zone where there's like, I don't know, let's put 20 ants.
Yes.
20 of these fly monsters. Let's put 20 fly monsters.
Yeah.
And there's just a stretch with 20 fly monsters. And I'm like, this is kind of interesting the first time. And now it's a little bit, you know, a little bit rote.
It reminds me of, and I don't want to say this to disparage From Software's game design capabilities or anything, because obviously, like, we have been talking here about these games for a decade. Yeah. Like, there's a reason. But when I see stuff like that, I can't help but think of, like, shitty Mario Maker levels. We're like, here's 10 Bowsers to deal with. And that's very much how it feels. Like, I don't want to fight 10 Bowsers. I just want to explore 9-2, right? Like, I don't want to have 10 Bowsers in 9-2. But sometimes you got to put those Bowsers in, I guess.
Yeah. It's not like it even feels necessarily lazy, and it's not even bad. So like something that's kind of interesting I was thinking about is, what is the value of this DLC if it's really at its best the first playthrough and has that drop off? Like, I don't regret those hours I spent in it. I don't know exactly how long I spent on the DLC my first playthrough, but it's a long fucking time. Even if that was just one, even if that's not something that is as fun to go through the next time, I still got my value out of it. Like, it still more than justifies itself, you know, as a thing. It doesn't have to last over and over and over.
Yeah.
Like, as a thing.
Yes.
You know, I think about, that's basically me with the old Hunters as well. Like, I played through the old Hunters twice, but the second time was not nearly as fun. Like, going through, you know, fighting those shark ogres, or like a couple parts in that are just huge pains in the ass.
Yeah. Why in the world would I go down that well?
Yeah.
You know, no, it's a puzzle the first time.
Yeah,
the first time it's a puzzle and it's like a question mark box, you know, but the second time it does lose a little bit of that charm, and maybe that's just kind of natural and okay.
Well, I mean, it's also the show, right? Like, you know, I find stuff that, is not holding up to the level of scrutiny necessary to, comment on it, comment on everything that didn't bother me the first time, because the amount of scrutiny that we're bringing is not natural.
Right. Like, it doesn't necessarily, this is not the ideal experience for it. Similar to like when you watch a movie or like the example I always think about is in high school. In English class, the teacher always said, we're reading this play, but this is not the way you're supposed to experience it.
Yeah.
Like, we're pouring over line by line of this Shakespeare, but this is 100% not how it's intended to be consumed. You're supposed to sit down and let this wash over you. You'll pick up things from context. There are odd little bits of language, but you'll get it if you watch the play. And like, it was, I remember it being a very valuable English teacher lesson of contrasting the mediums. We would read the play and then we'd watch it and it'd be like, oh, this makes so much more sense in a human context. Playing through the first time is kind of the watching of the play. And then what we do for the show or playing through a second time is a little bit like that close read.
Yeah.
And it's cool. You can get things from it, but it's in no way the way it was intended to be experienced.
I feel like, Gary, you and I encountered this when we tried to do the X-Men Evolution series for Days of Future Cast, and we realized like nobody should put this much attention on X-Men Evolution. Like, we need to abandon this and like, so I get that vibe sometimes covering X-Files as well, of like, oh, Scully and Mulder get an aging like virus this episode.
The boat that makes you old.
Yeah. Nobody writes that episode thinking like two guys are going to cover that for 45 minutes on a podcast one day. But like, sometimes you just get committed to a bit. So you kind of have to do it.
In the early 90s, they weren't thinking that.
Yeah.
No,
You'll see this when it airs, and that will be it until like 5 years later when you catch it on syndication in a hotel room.
That's it. Yeah.
In a way, what we're doing right now, this kind of close-up examination of things that we have all made our portions of our livelihood on, is absolute insanity to like somebody in 1990 anything.
Oh yeah.
Who's just like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? It's just a fucking TV show.
Yeah.
Like, you just watch the TV show. You know, like, you don't have to do this. You just play the fucking game and then you give it a fun factor score.
Yeah. Yeah. How many areas does it get?
Yeah.
You know? Are you saying that I shouldn't have done like 300 something hours or 600 something hours on the TV show Supernatural with my
600.
Life?
That's the first time I've heard that number.
It's around 300 episodes, but they're all like, an hour and a half to 2 hours apiece. So
yeah.
I try not to look at the terror numbers that much.
Yeah.
The tally man comes and fucks us all.
I was going to ask you how long it took y'all to finish the DLC, because for me it felt like a solid like 40 to 60 hours.
Yeah.
I went real slow though, because I was exploring like every single inch that I could find.
So. Took me about 40 hours. It's hard to tell because I used a pre-baked save that had a bunch of items and was at a proper level for my first time through, you know? And so like that had like 65 hours or something on it. So like I've got to do the math, but like, yeah, it came out to about 40 hours.
Okay.
It was a great length for a video game.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like absolutely. Stronger than Elden Ring in that respect. Like I love Elden Ring. I love how long and epic it is. You know, my first playthrough of it, again, treasure it forever. 40 hours of just concentrated Elden Ring. You know, we talked about this, the idea of taking the dungeon types and just expanding them rather than having quite as many. You know, it was a very nice, well dosed shot.
Yeah.
The proportions were great.
And man, the dungeons, like you can't sing enough praise about the dungeons. Like the Shadow Castle is probably, I mean, maybe the best level they've ever done, best dungeon that they've ever done, right? Like, I mean, just the way it connects to the world in multiple places and has all kinds of different shit happening. And I mean, the only complaint I have are there's fucking Fire Knights, which are just like the horned guys are just suck ass and like interrupt the flow of exploration for me a little bit. But otherwise, like, brilliant.
It's one of the funniest like area title card reveals when you walk in. And it's just Specimen Storehouse.
I love it.
Yeah. Yes, it's six stories high. I love how that is. I think it's one of their most successful, very complicated places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I love Shadowkeep. I couldn't draw a map of it.
No,
you know, because it has all of these connections in and out and everything. It reminds me of like a more successful, like Tomb of the Giants or Catacombs or something.
Yeah,
where like I couldn't quite map it, but it feels more like a real place that is just endlessly complex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it turning into a different biome. You know, when you're coming up from the town from below, things like that kind of feel almost like they're fucking with space.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A little bit. Like, that's excellent.
I mean, it's the Shadowkeep is the DLC in microcosm, right? Because like all the way down to, and I'm talking specifically about the spatial design, all the way down to like banging your head against a wall, trying to get to a place that you can see, but there is no apparent way to. It's like, you've got to like that's a whole other thing. That's like that. Yeah. You need to like take the longest route possible to get to that.
My favorite example of that is in the finger like cave finger like area down south.
The finger ruins of Rhea.
Yeah, if you're looking at the map, and there's like, if you zoom into the map, like you can, like they did a really good job of making a really subtle like dragon skeleton on the map, right? Mm-hmm. And it's something that I love. I love the map in Elden Ring, period. But if you look on the, like the west side, it looks like there's a path from the finger ruins to like another area that you can't quite get to from around it. Mm-hmm. And if you go up to it, it's just a wall. and there's just a bunch of messages in front of it from people saying like, you know, here map, why lie, or whatever the phrase is. But yeah, I just absolutely love it when a map lies to you in a video game. I think that's one of the best feelings ever. And they actually patched that out of the original Elden Ring.
With Jarberg and stuff.
With Jarberg, So, but having it here, I was like, yes, whoever that one person is that keeps sneaking these in is my friend at From Software.
I mean, I don't know, because maps are editorial, right? Like,
the map is not the train.
Yeah, right. Every map is a political statement, or just like a snapshot in time, right?
Somebody's been watching that cheese episode of West Wing.
No, I don't. Fuck that. No, I'm just saying, like, but just, you know, every map is a snapshot in time, and this is a world that's gone through cataclysm, right? Like, I don't know. I love that as an ongoing touch.
Was there a West Wing about like cheese tort reform or something? Is there a tariff?
Is like the one of the guys is like, he calls it Cheese Day for some and a reason I can't remember, but it's basically like, hey, we're going to get all of the weirdos in to pitch their weirdo stuff. And one of the weirdos, quote unquote, that came in to pitch to the staff was people who were trying to rewrite or redraw the world map to be proportionately accurate. so okay. that, you know, and it's, and so like, you know, and of course the, you know, the staff is dismissing this entirely until they start saying like, well, actually, if you look at it, you know, mm-hmm. Africa is as big as Greenland, but it's not represented on the map. And they're like, wait, the map is, globes are wrong. Like this it kind of goes into a thing. And it's just really, yeah. really funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeremy, where mm-hmm. can people find you?
If you want to follow my podcast, the best place to go is creepybutnecessary.cool. That'll bring you to all of my podcasts, Supernatural, X-Files, Merlin, Cowboy Bebop, Don't Give Up Skeleton, Dark Soul stuff. And then if you want to follow my Hannibal podcast, it's rudeeats.cool. highly recommend that. The Hannibal podcast is my co-host Mary is brand new to the show. So she's experiencing it all for the first time. She's actually brand new to Hannibal Lecter. If you can believe that. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So, and going into it via Hannibal is an experience. So every 2 weeks you get to hear her absolutely freak out and go crazy about the character that is Hannibal. And it's a lot of fun. And you can also find me online, JG Greer on Twitter and whatever my blue sky is, Jeremy. Just if you follow Gary, you probably follow me on blue sky already. So yeah. And that's where you can find me.
Awesome.
Nice. Yeah, recommended. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me. It's appreciate great to it, catch up with you guys.
Yeah, been a minute. Yeah, always happy to have you. So now that we've done our interview, we're going to read your thoughts about Castle Ensis and the Shadow Altus.
Yeah. Well, kind of a strange subdivision. It was either do this now or go 10 episodes between roundtables.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we try not to do that just because we want to hear what you have to say. We ask you questions in the episode. It would be rude not to give you a chance to reply.
Yeah. I didn't gather any follow-up. I apologize for that. Normally I do. Next time.
Yeah.
So I'll get started here with Nathan, who writes, when I first fought Rilana, I misread her name and thought I was fighting Rinala again. I just thought, yes, this is some shadow version of Rinala. Weird, but okay. I literally didn't realize it was a different character until you brought it up on the show. The confusion was mine, but I think it was caused by two main issues: the lack of context clues about the boss throughout the level, and the apparent requirement that all characters in the game have similar sounding names with either M or R. Don't forget the G's either.
Geez, this one is very specifically,
yeah,
pretty egregious though.
It's like they're, I don't use this pejoratively, but like literally it is there just to fuck with people who are dyslexic.
It feels a little bit like that. It's also the kind of thing every once in a while you'll actually see.
Yeah.
You know, like this is my daughter, Dakota, and this is my son, Kadota, or something like that. Every once in a while, there's some like Eldrick White Lady shit that does that.
Like, yeah.
You know, and it's like, come on, this is doing nobody any favors, including your kids.
It's not as cute
as you think it is.
One entire generation of your family, like, is like the combined is just an incantation.
Yeah. the abracadabra generation.
Yeah.
Jared says, as a serial non-reader of item descriptions, I literally guessed that the Shadow Realm was a past, future, alternate dimension version of the Lands Between. I spent hours trying to find the equivalent areas, fighting past the doubt of seeing the Shadow Gelmir, the Jagged Peak, on the wrong side of the map, eventually landing on Shadow Liurnia, the Gravesite Plains. The ultimate validation for my theory was exploring Shadow Caria Manor, aka Castle Ensis, and defeating Rilana and stepped into the Shadow Altus. That moment seemed like it was almost a one-to-one comparison between the Grand Lift of Rold and the Altus Plateau. Unfortunately, after a lack of good analogs, my theory fell apart pretty soon after that. I did have fun trying to figure it out, though, and I love how these games encourage player sleuthing.
Yeah.
Yeah, a fine idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the lack of clarity as to exactly what the Realm of Shadow is,
no,
you know, at least upfront clarity,
mm-hmm.
you know, that makes as much sense as anything just going into it.
Yeah, there's just enough consonants, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, Jagged Peak, okay, you could call that Shadow Gelmir, but like, that's also Dragonland, and it's roughly where the Dragon Barrow and Caelid would be,
mm-hmm.
you know, analogously.
Yeah.
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 So not a bad hunch.
Not a bad hunch at all.
Elizabeth writes, I agree with the theory that the Fort of Reprimand was designed, mostly, to punish those in Mesmer's forces who may have had second thoughts. I think the things you brought up all point to that, but I do think the biggest giveaway, or point in that theory's favor, to me, is the presence of America's rune, on the corpse pile. The description for the America's rune says, golden remnants of the grace personally bestowed by Queen America, to the heroes who joined the crusade for her. The brilliance of Queen Marika's grace blinds even the very best. I think that last sentence is really doing a lot of work, explaining how zealotry can infect and blind people to the truth in front of them. It also seems to me that, given the association with the amount of grace residing in people's eyes, that perhaps one of those crusaders blessed by Marika plucked out their own eye, saw the truth, and was rather brutally reprimanded.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would love the idea if the eyes were these runes we could pick up, because then I would have farmed that basement.
so many there. Yeah.
Delicious eyes.
Grapes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the only thing that gives me any hesitance with the reprimand fort theory is just how many corpses are in the basement.
Right.
But maybe
right.
That's, there's more than there are anywhere else in the game, feels like. It's a lot of soldiers dying, but that could be a set dressing thing as well.
Yeah.
Like pushing the fill button a little bit further, mm-hmm. harder than you want to.
Yeah. And it's a little too metal.
Yeah, a little too metal.
Yeah.
Brady says, so I've got two things I want to talk about, Moore and other stuff. I'm not sure if anyone's mentioned it yet, but I feel like Moore is neurodivergent of some type. As someone who is a high-functioning autistic, Moore talks the same way I would when encountering a stranger. I love him. I'm not sure if that's what they were going for when they created him, but that's just the vibe I get. I love the idea of, and the other one, I love the idea of bear communion. Like, it's just one thing that even the description doesn't take seriously. Shout out to my boy, Taylu. He can solo most of the bosses in the DLC, run to the litter my ass, and I love the martial arts. Bleed on them is incredibly fun, and it feels like really good to kick enemies in the back of the head.
Yeah, it does.
What bleed on them is.
No,
maybe
Bleed
on the weapons.
Yes,
got you.
Yeah,
yes.
That's my current build, just because bleed continues to be overpowered in the DLC.
Bleed on them is not a strong Ash of War, which is what I first read that as. Like, it's just like, we'll drown our enemies in our blood.
Bleed on them is a spell in Lunacid.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak to more being representation of any kind, he's just a real piece of quiet guy.
Yeah. Whenever I think about that kind of thing, if it helps somebody, then that's good.
Yeah.
If you enjoy the representation, that is awesome. I have no idea what they intended.
Yeah.
It'd be weird for, I'll be surprised if they verified it.
Yeah. And Moore's a sweetheart, right?
Like, yeah, hey, he's one of the only purely good characters in the DLC.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does, this is you.
Yes. Mystic Referee says, Leda is my favorite NPC of this DLC. Quote, brainwashed a zealot who is actually even more insanely zealous when the brainwashing charm is removed, unquote, is a hilarious and delicious version of a FromSoft character with hidden intentions. She feels like a composite take on many such characters they've done since Demon's Souls. Yurt, Lautrec, Navlin, Alfred, and Lap/Patches come to mind. It naturally made me curious about George R. R. Martin's hand in the DLC story, or rather, the story of Mikola's followers. In a previous episode, you mentioned the Oathseeker Knight set that we find outside of the Church of Benediction, hanging right above the pathway where we first spawn in the Gravesite Plain. While it seems innocuous, it is in fact the exact set that Leda is wearing. She drops an altered version of the armor piece with the cape. The description says, these knights set off on quests of discovery, hoping to find themselves in an oath of their own choosing to serve in perfect lifelong devotion. Paired with our knowledge later that she culled the rest of the Needle Knights in service of Mikola, my personal canon is that she and the other Oathseekers,
pled their devotion to Mikola of their own choosing. She murdered them when they doubted their devotion to Mikola, and I like to think that she was charmed in an effort to calm her fanaticism. The gentle love of Mikola's charm is presented otherwise as a horrifying perversion, but in this instance, it seems to curb her psychopathic tendencies.
Yeah, that is a super cool idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's specifically called out too. We're going to talk about it next episode, but like, you know, the charm is not just to get them loyal to Mikola; it is to get these people who come to get from along. To get along with each other. Yeah,
yeah, it's very similar to the rules of the real world.
Yeah,
the old MTV show.
Okay,
like the real world Mikola is what's going on with these strangers. We got these seven strangers to live in a house.
Yeah. But yeah,
it would be a webcomic if this game came out in 2004.
Probably
go back in time, make a mess.
You could do it today. It would start up a Blogspot for just that post.
Yeah, how would I monetize it though? It wouldn't be a career like it would be back in the day. I could have gotten an expo out of this.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have gotten a lot of controversies.
Yeah, sure. Could have lived an entirely different life. I like that.
Yeah.
And it does, I mean, she does calm down from this, but specifically the idea of like, okay, let's hypnotize you to, you know, to stop you from murdering everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Here's a zealot, and a zealot will remain a zealot no matter what.
Yeah. Lucas says, as somebody who sucks at exploring in these games, this area is where I was most confused in the DLC. I missed the entrance to Roa Base, the tunnel to Bonnie, the fort with the Black Knight Yoshi, and the basement of the Fort of Reprimand. I'm grateful for sections like this because it's left me new things to discover on following runs. There's nothing like that confusion of the first couple.
Yeah.
Finding a thing on a second run that you didn't do the first time is one of the most magical feelings.
Oh, I love it.
It's why I was, when I was really into... doing mods, basically anything that adds new geography feels extra magic to me.
Yeah. I mean, especially if it's within the context of what's already been there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good.
Yeah. Randall says, regardless of Castle Ensis, which I was a little fonder of due to the stepped layer design and needing to explore around corners and over ledges to find all the items, stepping out of Rilana's area was a magical moment. The moment resonated with the top of the lift of Dectus, a surprise new vista with so many places teased on the horizon. Shadow Altus had some of the best hidden paths in the DLC, dropping down to Fog Rift Fort, the path through the cave with the perfumers, and Morth Ruins. On the first pass, I felt constrained by the furnace golem ahead, so to then realize that the bounding box was more permeable was a special experience to me.
Yeah, generally not liking Ensis, but I love the Altus.
Yeah.
That moment was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. I also freed myself a lot by deciding not to fight any more furnace golems.
Yeah, no, I'm done.
Yeah, it's pretty boring. I look up what they have,
but
there's one in the next episode, and I had a real, like, should I fight this? Like, I know that I'm going through it for the show. Like, I should probably fight this.
No.
And I was like, oh, it's not going to be different.
No, you fought one. It's the same thing.
It's the same thing. Like, they suck.
Yeah.
It's one of the worst enemies in the DLC. Like realizing that you just run past those guys. They usually don't, luckily they don't put important stuff near them.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't know that until you explore it, but there's not like stuff that's going to take time that they usually put by them.
They're so much more successful as an environmental feature and hazard.
Yeah.
Like when we say they suck, like obviously they look real cool and their place in the lore is great. It's just, I don't need to kill anymore. I've done it.
Yeah. I just wish they had less HP.
Yeah.
But Collinsbro 45 says, in so many ways, the DLC proves to be an echo of the base game. The two paths to Shadow Altus via Castle Ensis and the back way through the Fort of Reprimand being a reverse version of the Dectus Lift, with no named boss required to achieve, and the Coward's Path with its magma worm to get into the Altus Plateau. That is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a nice observation.
A lot of them. A lot of comparisons to the lifts here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like getting that moment, you know, it's not the same thing in terms of like where you're at in the world, but I think they're probably purposely evoking it.
Yeah.
It did feel like Liurnia into Altus to me with Rilana there.
Stepping into the new possibility space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see here. We have two from Charlie, so I'll just read both of them back to back. Charlie saying, I didn't dislike Castle Ensis as much as you, but I tell you, I loved the Fort of Reprimand. I originally approached the latter the opposite way that you guys did, via a spirit spring, as opposed to the entrance after the Ghostflame Dragon. What seemed like a very small legacy dungeon turned out to have all sorts of hidden areas and secret passages, notably the body chute, which I very nearly missed. What fun. They also say, I was surprised to encounter a single lone manfly while playing through the subterranean shunning grounds. Or at least, I'm sure that's what it was. It's dark down there. I've looked online, but I can't find mention of this unique enemy. Anybody else able to corroborate? Let us know.
Yeah, if you've had that experience, I don't think that there were those in the...
No.
In the subterranean shunning grounds. But I haven't been in the subterranean shunning grounds in a bit.
Right.
The
I think it would have had to have been backported or something. Yeah.
They no longer have the pizza place I like.
Ah, yeah.
There, with where they have Pepsi Max still for some reason.
Yeah.
Raphael says, hi guys, longtime listener, first time commenter. As I explored Fort of Reprimand, I quickly thought about the loathsome dung eater. He's probably lonesome as well. Mm-hmm. Surely we've seen many gallows in the game, but something about those in the Fort of Reprimand reminded me of the picture in the game's intro where you see the Dung Eater being hung. The presence of the Omen Killers reinforced this association. Sorry, Gary. In my head, and I didn't think much of it. That is until listening to the last episode with you discussing the Iris of Occultation. The theme of denying someone of light and grace again reminded me of the Dung Eater and how he could sever people from the cycle of the Erd Tree. In the end, I doubt there is anything solid behind these speculations, and upon looking at that picture from the intro again, it looks like a different place. Still, mm-hmm. I'm curious if anyone had similar thoughts, or if these observations bring up any ideas from other lore hunters.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Real quick, a note just that was passed along to me verbally. When we talked about the iris of, why can't I say that today? Occultation?
Mm-hmm. Occultation.
Occultation. Yeah. Occultation. The way we were talking about it, it did seem to imply that there was only one. Mm-hmm. There's two copies of each eye in the game. I can't remember what I got in the first one, and I can't remember if I was trying to imply that there were only one.
Yeah.
There are multiples.
Yeah. We did make a point of that during the episode. Okay. We did say that, you know, there's this one, but they're like the other one is a more of a pain in the ass to get. So this would be the one to go get.
Yeah.
So whoever passed that along to you verbally probably should have listened to the entire episode. Will.
I didn't go back to listen to the episode to see who's right. You both sound familiar, and I don't want Dennis to fight.
He was riding high off of correcting something about there being two serpents.
Yeah.
He decided to walk into my house and tell me how to do my job.
Classic.
Let's see. I'll take Matt here. Sorry, Luke, I couldn't find your response in the email. I did a search for it. The replies, the responses here do need to be as comments because otherwise, Matt says, you're both 100% correct that the story and mood and vibe surrounding Relana was more or less non-existent. However, I would say she was my favorite boss fight of the DLC from a perspective of pure play. Nothing felt unfair. The moveset built on itself as the fight went on. The double moons were neat looking. She wasn't a cakewalk, nor a frustrating massacre hate fest. She took me a handful of tries. Each time I got a little bit closer. By the end, I felt that I had learned it and beat her with the appropriate level of challenge. Sure, almost every other boss wins in pure spectacle, but Relana was just good gaming. Gosh darn it. Or maybe I just give 5 stars to anything that reminds me of Maria. Who can say? Yeah, it might be both.
Yeah, and no disagreement there. Like, it's an excellent fight.
Yeah, it's great.
You know, it tried to stress that as much as we could. Like, I think it's a really good fight. Mm-hmm. I just wanted a little bit more to it because I've seen, you know, but that's going back to what you talked about, Jeremy, a little bit. Like, I've just seen that kind of thing.
Yes.
Like, a very fair duel.
Mm-hmm.
They're good, you know, but I like other stuff on top.
Yes.
Personally. I will read the next two because they're super short.
Mm-hmm.
Scroats Magooch. says, Ensis is such a crusty little dungeon. Thematically, I feel like Relana would have been much better than the Cerulean Coast.
Yeah.
Aesthetically, at the very least.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
That looked great. And then Hakan says, I might be might have misunderstood you guys during the episode. However, the Lazuli Sorcerer is not a new enemy type for the DLC. Mm-hmm. I remember killing them and getting their set in the main game. They appear in Karya-coded places.
I don't recall that.
Yeah, huh. I don't.
All of the statue head guys look similar to me. And I double checked. It didn't say that they were showing up anywhere else. The fact that they show up here with their description did make them feel like they were endemic to this place. So if that's a mistake, I will own that.
Yeah, it looks like the Lazuli Sorcerer set.
Uh-huh.
You do get that in Raya Lucaria.
Okay.
The armor and everything.
Gotcha. Well, fuck me.
I get the Burger King, you know, the king confused as well.
Yeah.
The big head guys. But yeah, no, that is a good note. It would make sense for them to have a unique, you know, prospectus out here, for Rolana to take one with her.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, that they weren't doing that because everyone was just kind of getting an encore.
Yeah.
You know, so they kind of didn't do that. They just needed a Karian flavored place with Karian shit in it.
Yeah. I do feel like them being about the moon being equal to the stars is consonant with what little flavor and text we get about Rolana and Castle Ensis. So it feels like a natural fit that they're the only ones you find here to me.
Yeah.
And finally, here we have Carl, who says, this section of the DLC was where it really came together for me and where I fell in love with it. I had bounced hard off of the Dancing Lion with my extremely foolish fist weapons only build that I stubbornly stuck to the entire playthrough. Carl's talking, I believe he streamed like a Tifa Lockhart build, I think. I was worried that the bosses were all going to be classic From Software fuck you difficulty. So when I got to Rolana, I was pleasantly surprised that it was the type of difficulty I have been chasing in all these games since my first bout with Artorias. I am also a huge sucker for a fight with a Karian knight in a moon-gazing pool. Though you guys brought up the great point on how it doesn't really get elaborated on, and there is almost no text surrounding her, / it kind of makes no sense. I think I was just extra stoked for, I was just extra stoked on Rinala's secret sister because a friend of mine had accidentally almost spoiled that for me in a text by naming the bosses he had found. Funny enough, when he had mentioned her by name, my brain just filled in the middle of the word and thought, well, shit, I guess there's some sort of refight against Rinala in the DLC, which would have been awesome to find out naturally. So finding her felt extra cool to me. Rao Base was actually the last piece of the map that I found on my playthrough hours and hours after doing everything else. I had played most of the DLC and figured it would be safe to watch other streamers' playthroughs of the early game without spoilers. And sure enough, I saw people getting to an area that I had never seen within the first couple of hours of their playthrough and finding the Rao base map piece almost immediately, all because they went to one direction that I didn't. I absolutely loved being lost in this DLC.
Yeah, I'm with you. I also got that. It's more or less last.
Yeah.
So yeah, easy mistake to make or a common mistake to make.
Yeah.
Who knows how easy it was?
No. Yeah. I mean, you did it, so you can say.
I don't remember it. The secret sister thing, and this is kind of interesting too.
Uh-huh.
You know, we talked about that as it, you know, and we talked about the maiden, mother, and crone kind of thing that they're doing with these witches. Secret sister kind of feels a little bit beneath the tenor of storytelling we're doing a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't it feels a little bit like soap opera-y?
A little bit.
To me, like, we never mentioned the sister before, but I assure you she's there and she's kind of important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess they don't assure you that she's important.
Yeah, I was going to say they don't really do.
That's kind of how it gets away with that.
Yeah, you know? they don't try and like gas her up to us.
No, there's the game isn't that fond of her either.
No,
you know, in terms of character.
Yeah.
Thanks everybody for replying. Mm-hmm. We appreciate it.
Yeah. We'll be back next week, getting started with, first talking about the characters after the Great Rune breaks, then headed down to, the Cerulean Coast.
Yeah. The visually best area in the game, probably. other than perhaps Midra's Mance. We appreciate you. Thank you for patronizing us. You've already done all the things. The only things you could do is tell other people and leave us range reviews.
Yeah.
We'd appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And listen to other shows on the network.
Please do. And also join us in thanking our producer, Gwen.
Yeah. And what should they do until next time?
Until next time, look out for the other secret sister, Larana.
Oh, no.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon. Mm-hmm.